Keith Middleton's Late Night Extravaganza on the BBC in the Midlands.
You may remember my next guest because he's been a member of probably every band that ever been known, namely the Applejacks, Procol Harum, let me see, Bedlam, he's been in there. Oh, and he's out on his own right now, and he's got a couple of albums out, and they were released on the same day. Now, that is unusual. I'd like to welcome to the show Dave Ball. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Keith, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Where are you in the world? Because I've got it here that you've been Melbourne, you've been Frankfurt, and you were born in Handsworth in Birmingham, and now Staffordshire.
Yes, well, actually, you can add New Zealand on there. I'm sort of, I think I've gone on tax lists on at least three different countries. But yeah, right now I'm in a village just a couple of miles outside of Burton-on-Trent.
So nice.
Get back, actually, in the Midlands again.
So you're not short of a beer or two, a pint or two?
No, but look, I walk down my drive and 10 yards to the left is a pub. I mean, it's Burton's known for its brewing, of course.
What can I say, eh? Home sweet home. Dave, where do I start? We can talk about your autobiography, we can talk about your life in Procol Harum and all the other bands, but we've only got a couple of minutes. I mentioned a couple of albums which were released on the 23rd of April, two together. Now, that is unusual. Tell me about that.
Well, I had planned, since about 2005, Keith, I'd left bands a long time back in 1974. The last band was Bedlam.
Yeah.
And rock and roll was taking its toll, to be perfectly frank. And, you know, I wasn't particularly well boyed, so I did any aspiring sort of rock person does, and I joined the British Army and got myself fit and well and carried on like that for a few decades in various jobs.
Yeah.
Around about 2005... I'd been writing a lot of music again. You never stop doing music once you're a musician. So, and I was building up quite a stockpile of material, which, you know, is up to about 100 original songs. So I put a plan in place. I said, like, at some point I have to stop the corporate sort of, you know, day job.
Yeah.
And I've got to get this stuff recorded. And this is really the first sort of salvo from that. So I put together this first ever solo album after a 40-year break. I'm pretty pleased with it. It's not we didn't spend lots of money recording the thing. A lot of it is done myself and with three other sort of musician engineer type people.
Yeah.
And that's it. So this is the sort of first salvo, and the other record is actually a Bedlam re-release. It was a live show, and there's a bonus on there of the Cozy Powell Dance with the Devil.
I was going to say, because the late Cozy Powell was in Bedlam, wasn't he?
That's right, yes. And this is the only recording we have of Bedlam with Cozy playing that single, and it was taken off a TV show we did in Los Angeles back in 1974. And that's a bonus track on this the Bedlam CD.
It's called In Command 1973.
That's correct.
Obviously, you were quite close to Cozy Powell. How did that affect you when you found out that he'd been killed?
Well, it was... I mean, I was mortified, along with everybody else. You could say, you know, it came as a big shock, but, of course, he always drove to the limit. You know, I've driven for over 40 years, and I've never had an accident, but I've been in quite a few accidents, and most of them were actually with Cozy driving. So
really?
Yeah, really. And so, it was terribly sad. We had actually lost touch for a lot of years. At the end of Bedlam, we left under some not-so-great circumstances, as he wanted to go off and pursue, you know, sort of basically pop singles and so on, and yeah. I wasn't interested in doing that, so... But, it was terrible. You know, I was in the UK at the time. I was working down in Poole. And so I was able to get to his funeral. And then we had a wake in a little country pub. And I can't even where it was, in the West Country somewhere. Mm. And, you know, Jeff Beck and Brian May and a few other, Peter Green. It was a guitarist table, actually. It was a very sad affair, very sad indeed, and sorely missed.
Wow, Cozy Pal. And Les, is it Friday yet? Watson agrees with that. Is now you're talking, Cozy Pal. A little after 10:30. Now, my guest in conversation just a few days ago was Dave Ball of Procol Harum fame. Now, as a member of Bedlam at one time, Dave contributed to a sound worthy of going on tour with Black Sabbath.
Yeah, we did our one US tour we did with Sabbath, supporting them. I'd say we were a new band. The album had got released, the studio album that we did had got released in the States. And, we had a great time. I mean, I've known Sabbath since day one, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I can't actually, on radio, I can't tell you all the things we got up to, but it was a lot of fun.
I bet it was, yeah. I've interviewed one or two members of Sabbath, and most of them can't remember their career, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yes, I know exactly.
The new album, which you sort of skated over, it's called Don't Forget Your Alligator. How did you get that name?
It's one of the tracks is called Don't Forget Your Alligator. The way I do songwriting generally is usually a line pops into my head, and I had the line that had come into my head was, which is the first line on that song, was dance first, think later.
Right.
And I just had this in my head, and I thought, well, this is a great line for a song, and I just looked for something to rhyme with it, and I just came up with dance first, think later. Don't forget your alligator. And I thought, oh, no bugger, that'll do.
That'll do.
And that's how it started. You know, that's how the alligator thing got in there.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Well, those two are on available now. Can you buy them as CDs or their own downloads? Or
CDs, downloads. They're in the company that I've dealt with, Angel Air Records, a British indie, been around for about 15 years.
Yeah.
Put it on iTunes.
Born in Handsworth.
Yes, born in Handsworth. I think I'm a triple national at the moment. Kiwi, an Aussie, and still a Brit, of course. It gets complicated.
How long did you spend in the Midlands?
Oh, I went to school here. I mean, I left school at 15, which is 1965. And we played in the Birmingham bands, myself and my two brothers, variously. My brother Dan was in Danny King and the Mayfair set.
Yeah.
Danny King, the Jesters, then the Mayfair set. My brother Pete in Youngblood, Sorcerers, then Youngblood, which is where we found Cozy, actually. Pete brought him back from Germany.
Okay.
And I'd played with a variety of Birmingham acts, the Little People and Chicago Hush and the Madding Crowd. Went to Germany with the Madding Crowd. We backed the McKinley Sisters, a couple of Scottish girls out there. And we'd sort of centred around Birmingham. We'd moved to Sutton, actually. We'd sort of gone up in the world out of Handsworth.
Yeah, okay.
No disrespect to Handsworth.
No.
But, so we basically learned our trade here, pretty much here and in Germany, which was the way a lot of the Brummy bands did it at that time.
How did you get into Procol Harum?
Well, I mean, it was a sort of fluky advert. They'd advertised in one of the British, probably the main British music paper of the time, called The Melody Maker.
Yeah.
And they stuck an ad in there, and I was living in London. I'd actually ignored the ad for about a week, and because I didn't know where they were, actually. They disappeared off touring the States and doing the universities and things in the States. And
yeah.
So not many people over here had really heard much about them since they had left, you know, since White Shade of Pale and Homburg and so on. And I'd seen this advertisement, and then after a week, I thought, oh, well, I'll give it a ring. You never know. Maybe they're working. You know, I didn't actually consider how big they might be at the time.
Yeah.
Anyway, they at first, the woman in the office refused me the interview because she said, we've already got 80 applicants. And so I actually went round to their office and chatted this girl up for about an hour until she put me on the list.
As you do.
And went down to the rehearsal studio in the Rolling Stones studio in London Bridge down there. And, you know, I walked in and these guys were exhausted. You could tell that they'd heard every, you know, Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix and Robin Trower solo known to man. And,
yeah.
And I went in, we played a few things. I played fine. I did what I play my one solo, which I know in lots of different keys, you know. And then at some point I told a couple of jokes, I think. And then I said, look, does anybody fancy a pint? And they all kind of went, yeah, let's go for a drink. So we went down the road to the local pub, and we were in there for a few hours drank a lot. I got on really well socially, and then I packed, you know, I'd got my guitar with me, and I said, well, look, thanks ever so much. It's been a great evening, and see you later. And sort of just wandered off and staggered back to my flat. And then the next day, the girl who I'd chatted up, she said, well, I don't know what you did with them, she said, but anyway, you're in.
Got to play that one for Colin McChrystal. Great tunes on the show tonight, Keith. Thank you, Colleen. White a Shade of Pale, Procol Harum, of which Dave Ball was a member. And I was chatting to Dave the other day, and I suggested that during the interview, it wasn't the guitar, as in the interview for his job, it wasn't his guitar technique, it was the beer.
It was the beer. Exactly that. I told a couple of Jick Gags that they hadn't heard. And you know, I could drink beer, and Procol were a big, you know, they were a beer-drinking band more than anything else.
Fantastic.
They still are. I see Gary probably once or twice a year,
yeah.
And Gary Brooker. And we do the same thing. We drink beer and tell tall stories.
It's, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. What a great story. How do you have time to breathe, Dave? I say that because you're not only a musician, you're also, you've done your autobiography,
yeah.
Which is called Half Hippie, Half Man.
Yep.
You've wrote some stuff as well, like Without Rhyme or Reason,
yes.
Time Gentlemen, Please, The Chronicle of the Nano Wars. How do you have time to start? Let's look at your autobiography first. Half Hippie, Half Man. Is that you?
Half Hippie, Half Man is me, yes. I mean, I think it's actually my son coined that. I've got three kids, one New Zealander daughter and two Melbourne boys. And when I was living in Poole, the Melbourne lads with their mother had come over for a visit with us. And I can't help myself, Keith. I'm always telling stories. You know, I'm a dinner party dream, really.
Yeah.
And I had just told some other long tale. And my son, Alex, who at that time, I guess, was about 14 or 15, there was a silence after I'd finished this yet another story, and he just looked across and he went, my dad, half hippie, half man.
Brilliant.
Well, you know, that's it. You know,
it's got to be it. Idle.
But no, I mean, there's plenty of hours in the day if you care to use them. I mean, I've got the autobiography, which incidentally is coming out in e-publishing. I couldn't find a publisher, you know, they all moved too quick for me.
Yeah.
But that'll be out on Kindle and iBooks and things like that at the end. Would have actually been out now probably a couple of weeks, but anyway, it's a bit behind the albums.
Yeah.
But I've got artwork as well, because I've been a painter and drawer of things since the mid-60s, and I've got a large portfolio of work from that, and I'm pushing that out as well. It's really, I think, it's not quite desperation, but before I die, I want to have finished all of this stuff and actually got it out into the public domain for anybody who's interested.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. On your blurb, because I've inadvertently printed out not only all your autobiography but everything else. I've got about a million pages in front of me, and there's one line that says, "I did some stuff in music till I was 24, and then did other stuff, and now I'm back." Now, that's a long time to be, if you like, out of the game.
Yes.
What did you get up to?
I've been in two armies, two police forces. I've worked in IT. I've been at sea. I've been a real estate person. Postal sorter, New Zealand Post, airmail, nothing, you know. Pop stuff.
Why did you choose to go down that road, Dave? Because I would, you know, if you, as a pop star, you get sex, drugs, rock and roll, and the money, I would assume, that came with it in the early days. Maybe
yes.
More so these days, but, you know, in the early days. And then you went off and did, if you like, proper work for, I would assume, less money.
Oh, most certainly. I mean, when I was in the forces, I think I used to get £21 a week, maybe, I think. Obviously, you get room and board.
Mm.
No, I mean, the sex, drugs and rock and roll, I mean, look, it was a little bit of part of the culture of the time, and I always throw myself full, you know, head first into culture, so I'd burnt the candle both ends and the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, I was still walking wounded, but, you know, I wasn't a well boy, I don't think, and really the idea of of getting out of the business. I didn't like the business much. I love to play, you know, I love to entertain, and all of those things that go with that.
Dance first, think later. It's the natural.
What a completely different sound from Dave Ball. Don't forget your alligator. So, Dave and I continued our conversation. He took the break, and then what?
I was walking past an army recruiting office, actually in New Street in Birmingham. I'd gone back to Mum and Dad's place, and I looked in the window there, and they have all these glossy pictures of people, you know, squaddies sailing in Cyprus and, you know, and skiing. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll have some of that. So I just sort of marched straight into that office and went through the first sort of stage of the recruitment thing, which was basically picking up a lot of glossy magazines. And after that, when I got home and started looking at all these things, I thought, you know, this really is the right thing for me to do. And, of course, you know, I had a few weeks before we sort of started off on basic training and so on. I had to go through a process. In fact, I had to go to Sutton Coldfield Barracks, which is where they used to do the, you know, selection for different regiments, etc.
Right.
And that ironically, that was on the same road as Mum and Dad lived. So I actually walked from Mum and Dad's place up to the recruitment.
To the army, yeah.
And I'd had a couple of weeks to try and get myself at least healthy enough to pass the basic army tests, which, you know, which is you've got to run a little bit and do a couple of, you know, a couple of heaves and a couple of push-ups.
Yeah.
And I had enough time to get that done so that I wasn't completely knackered when I went through this thing. And that was it. And the next thing I know, I'm down in Aldershot and going through, I forget exactly how long now, something like 18 weeks of basic training, and I find myself on a drill square, right-hand marker, because I'm tall, I'm 6'4", and I always seem to end up as right-hand marker, marching around being shouted at by some 21-year-old corporal, and the whole thing was, it just went from there.
Wow. You said when you walked down New Street, you thought this is the right thing to do, and was it?
Yeah, it was, absolutely. You know, for all that I was a sort of, you know, a hippie from those days and very much, you know, anti-war and all the rest of those things, you know, at the same time, you know, the practicalities of life suggest that at some point you might need a bit of a military there. And it was really, I don't know that I really went into deep thought about it, the moral issues or anything like that. I just thought, well, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. I'll be a soldier. And
you did it.
Exactly what I did.
Fantastic. So you're back. Yes. With the two albums, Don't Forget Your Alligator, is the solo release, came out in April, and exactly the same time, the Bedlam In Command album, 1973, featuring Dance with the Devil with the late, great Cozy Powell on there. Half Hippie, Half Man is your autobiography. Dave, if anybody wants to find out more about what you do, your writing, your artwork and your music, etc., have you got a website at all?
Yes, I've got a website. It's just being updated, so by the time you hear this, it will be the new version of it. It's www.worldslump.com.
Any Midlands gigs coming up?
Well, yes, I've got Burt Fest, which is Burton on Trent. I've got a music festival. Started last year, and this year is going to be bigger and better. And there's about 100 acts on, including Saxon, I think, is coming on, and even the Wurzels.
Well, that's a strange mix, isn't it? Saxon and the Wurzels.
It's a very strange mix, but I guarantee it'll be good fun. There are lots and lots of local bands anywhere between sort of Birmingham, Nottinghamshire, Stafford, Stoke, all around the surrounding area, plus, you know, just about every band in Burton, and there are quite a lot. I was quite shocked me how many there were actually around there. So that's a good one, a big one for the local area. And so come along and support it. Get into live music. You know, there are gigs in pubs all around the place here. So I encourage people to get out and come and visit.
Excellent, Dave. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
It has been a pleasure to talk to you too, Keith.
And
good work.
Good luck with the albums and the autobiography and the artwork and whatever you choose to do in the future. Dave Ball, thank you.
Thanks ever so much. Bye for now.
Procol Harum and Homburg. 4 minutes to 11 o'clock. BBC in the Midlands, Saturday night. Keith and Sue on a 60s extravaganza.